Good afternoon, Juno. It's almost 3 p.m., and it's time for another edition of a Juno Afternoon for Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014. I'm Ken Fix. I will be your host for today. On the show, we'll be talking with Sulak Sivaroska, a 81-year-old Thailand activist who has come to town for a variety of presentations, World Affairs Wednesday and Friday night at the UAS. Also, a fourth in the series of City and Department of Juno profiles. We're going to be doing Parks and Recreation with Brett Fisher and George Schaff. Grandparents' Day is September 7th. Longtime teacher Cindy McCallan will be here to tell us about a month-long class on Thursdays on grandparenting. And Juno School District Superintendent Mark Miller will be here to talk about the school district's response to hazing and moving forward as a community. These guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more for Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014. Stay tuned. We're going to National Native News right now.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Officials will be taking up the issue of water rights in North Idaho this fall. As Steve Jackson reports, the Coeur d'Alene tribe is a major participant.
The process is called water adjudication and will determine who gets how much of the region's water. The state has had a senior water rights policy for years, but also has a lose-it-or-use-it policy, meaning if some aren't using their current rights, they can be taken away. The Coeur d'Alene tribe is poised to dramatically increase its water rights holdings. As per procedure, the U.S. Justice Department has filed for 353 water right claims on behalf of the tribe. The tribe's legislative director, Hilo Hancock, says the tribe is not looking to take any current water rights away from others, and no one should be concerned that they will lose their present water rights.
There's always a lot of misunderstanding when it comes to tribal law and certainly tribal water rights claims. I think there are some folks who believe that no matter what amount the tribe claims, it's going to take their individual water right amount away. And that's just not the case.
The tribe's claims have come under fire from one property rights group who says water resource regulations require priority dates to be set for each water right based on when water was first needed for that use. They point out that some of the requests are for modern uses, like a casino and a golf course, but they date back to 1873. But Idaho Water Department Resources spokesman Carter Fritchley says the dates on those water claims originate from federal law rather than state law.
And it's true that state-based claims are the claims filed based on state law date from the first beneficial use or the first application for permit. But claims based on federal law can date back to the creation of the reservation.
The Water Resources spokesman says the state of Idaho has filed objections to all of the tribe's water claims through the Attorney General's office. The cases will be decided over the next year and a half. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting.
The Omaha Tribe of Nebraska has reached a settlement with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The Associated Press reports the settlement, announced last week, includes plans to improve tribal drinking and wastewater systems and trash collection. The tribe will also pay a civil penalty. The EPA said the tribe violated federal environmental laws. Indigenous filmmakers recently celebrated 20 years of a Native film program with screenings during the Santa Fe Indian Market in New Mexico. Christine Trudeau has more.
Sundance organized a selection of 6 feature films and 2 short films representing a range of filmmakers from its Native lab. Sterling Harjo was one of them. Harjo's latest film, This May Be the Last Time, was part of the screening, the director's first feature-length documentary. For Harjo, art is a natural extension of who Indigenous people are.
Art and poetry are connected into our upbringing and our ceremonies and our way of life and our historically our way of living. And so it's just a natural thing for us to fall in line and be artists ourselves. Percentage-wise, we have a ton of artists compared to like the regular population in the world. You know, I don't know many Native people that aren't artists in some way or another.
Harjo, Muscogee Creek, and Seminole got his start at 23 in the Sundance program, and over the last decade, he's written, directed, and produced several feature-length films. The Native Lab Fellowship credits itself as one of the top programs for aspiring Native filmmakers by providing support and connecting beginning filmmakers to the Institute's numerous resources. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Bill John Baker says the tribe is prospering. In his State of Nation address, Baker highlighted investments like new homes, expanded health centers and services, and job creation. The speech was delivered over the weekend in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by the National Indian Education Association, an inclusive Native organization representing Native students, educators, families, communities, and tribes. Membership registration available at NIEA.org. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Our first guest on a Juno afternoon today is Sulak Savaraska. I am very pleased to have him. He is an 81-year-old Thailand activist who is here in town for a variety of presentations, including World Affairs on Wednesday and Friday night at the University of Alaska Southeast. Welcome, Sulak. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, it's great to have you here in Juno. How are you enjoying the weather? It got better just as you got here.
Beautiful. I'm a man with good luck.
Okay.
All right, cool. Good weather.
All right, and let's go over a little bit of what you're going to be discussing at the UAS for the Wednesday and Friday night presentations.
On Wednesday, I'm supposed to be talking about Southeast Asia, the unrest in that part of the world, to World Affairs Council, right?
Which is meeting here at K2 Wednesday night.
Okay, that's going to be in the studio here?
At 5 p.m., yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the spirit and education movement. How did you get involved in that? How did that start?
Spirit and education movement is the one I created 15 years ago to challenge mainstream education. Because mainstream education teach people to become clever, but not to become good. Because spirit and education movement means that we should realize each individual has a spirit. Whether you're Buddhist, Christian, or atheist, the spirit in fact means how to breathe properly. Most education don't teach you how to breathe, they teach you how to think. The more you think, the more you become clever, then you want to compete with others, you want to overcome others. Whereas if you learn how to breathe, in fact we breathe all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, non-stop. But if you don't know how to breathe properly, you breathe in a lot of anxiety, anger, violence. But if you learn how to breathe properly, then you breathe in mindfulness, you breathe in love, compassion, then you restructure your consciousness. Your heart and your head come together. The more you learn, the more you become less selfish, you care more for others. Not only other people, all sentient beings, nature. So this spirit education movement started in my country, which I call Siam, not Thailand. Then we worked very closely in Burma for 15 years. In those days, nobody was allowed to go into Burma. But we managed to work with the Christian, with the tribal people, later on with the Buddhists. We do likewise in Laos, which is a communist country. But we are allowed to work there because spirit education movement not a threat to anyone. But at the same time, make people, empower people. They feel that they are not inferior to others. We all become equal. We all empowering. So we have been moving around in that part of the world for 15 years.
You've got some pretty high ideals that you're pursuing. I would like to get back to a quote that you had given out, which was, religion is at the heart of social change, and social change is the essence of religion.
The word religion, sometimes we think in terms of dogmas, in terms of belief. That may be useful, may be harmful. But religion, in fact, for me, is something which helps you to free yourself from selfishness. It could be a Christian religion, could be a Buddhist religion, could be Islam. If it doesn't have that dimension, religion could become oppressive. That's why so many religious wars and so on. So I think if religion, in the proper perspective, it will help people to empower people spiritually, and they will care for others. So I think social change must start with your own change. You change yourself, building peace inside, and then apply peace to the world by understanding the world is full of social structure which is unjust and violent. So we must learn not to hate the oppressor, but learn to do the unjust system, to undo the oppressive system mindfully, non-violently.
Why do you think that humankind as a whole is always war-minded and fighting for things? Since the dawn of time, we've had warfare basically for three reasons. It's fighting over women, stuff, or religion. It's always been that way. Why do you think that we are, as entities, always looking to pursue our dominance over somebody else by forcing them to either give up something or to believe something the way that we believe?
If you go back to modern Western philosophy, you start with René Descartes, who said, "Cogito ergo sum," I think, therefore I am. The more you think, the more you think you're clever. Cogito, thinking. Ergo me, over me, me and you, competing each other. I think that is the dilemma. In the West, you always competing with each other. And when you compete, overcome nature, nothing left for you. That's why from Europe, you came to the New World, killing all the natives, and you claim that you were the person to discover America. In fact, the people were there, and you killed them almost all. And again, then you enslaved Africans to come here to be slaves, to work. And if I may say so, American Empire spreading all over the world. You know, you even went to Vietnam uninvited. Now Afghanistan, Iraq, and so on. Merely because the ego, I'm better than you are. I must conquer you. I must be richer. I think all this is nonsensical. It comes from ignorance. The Buddha said, ignorance starts all the wrong thing. If you change the root cause, instead of ignorance, you learn to be wise. You learn to have real understanding. Instead of anger and violence, you learn to have non-violence. You learn to have friendliness. Instead of greed, you learn to be generous. It's a mere restructure your consciousness. Even American Empire right now can change, and your country will be kind of a lovely U.S. Republic, not capital R, Republic. And then I think your country will be admired by all around the world. You're not going to be hated by all those people. You can change. Mere change is possible, but you must change yourself first before you change the world.
Okay, I'm in complete agreement with you about wisdom. I mean, there's a lot of people that have smarts, but wisdom, I think, comes from a lot of experience and making mistakes and observation of the world around you, and finally acceptance of a lot of the things around you that you can't change. What I would like to get into now is what do you feel is the best approach for dealing with groups like radical Islam that we're now having to deal with?
But if you don't regard them as the enemy, regard them as friends, try to have dialogue, try to listen. Some Muslims are very violent, but some of them are not. Some of the Christians are also very violent, some of them are not. So the Christian non-violent should speak to the Christian violent, and the Muslim non-violent should speak to the Muslim non-violent. With dialogue, you can change within your religion, and then ecumenical things change. I was in Burma last time in Rangoon. There were big thing, you know, the Burmese, Buddhists, and the Rohingya, the Muslim fighting. I told them this approach, and they like it. And now they're going to organize a meeting with Muslim, Buddhists together, to have dialogue. Once you have dialogue, you regard the others, not your enemy, they're your friends, and listen. And sometimes you have to tell them that you are wrong. Express your sin, is put in the Christian term, and ask for forgiveness. Forgiveness in the Buddhist term is called appaya. Appaya. Appaya means fear. Once you learn not to fear, that's real forgiveness. We are afraid, that's why we don't forgive. And what are the enemies? The best enemies are the worst enemies within ourselves. Hatred, greed, delusion. Chain that. The enemy is not outside. Once you chain inside, you become fearless. You are open to everyone. The so-called enemies become friends.
Right, Lockwell. You are giving those presentations that are coming up, and let's highlight again which nights and times they're going to be, and they're all going to be at University of Alaska
no,
Southeast.
No, they're not.
They're
no.
not, okay.
No, no. Wednesday, right here at K2.
Wednesday's here,
yeah.
Okay, and Friday night's at the UAS.
Yes, it's the first Friday at Egan.
Okay.
And the one Wednesday, World Affairs Council is sponsoring that, and it's at 5 o'clock in the 360 North studio here. And then the one Friday is the beginning of the whole series at the university of their first Fridays at Egan. And that's, it's either in the Egan Lecture Hall or the library, but it's, there are posters all around, and it's, I believe it's 7.
All right. Well.
And then, so we get to have him all week and.
Very good. All right, Sulak Samaraska, thank you very much for being our first guest in the studio today. And, pleasure to have you here, and I hope you enjoy a little bit of Southeast Alaska.
Thank you.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder. Ride on the peace train. Ooh, ooh. Come on, the peace train. Get peace train, holy roller. Everyone jump up on the peace train. Ooh, ooh. Ooh, ooh. Come on. Your good friends too, cause it's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. Come and join the living, it's not so far from you. And it's getting nearer, soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder. World as it is, why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides the peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Oh, peace train sounding louder. Ride on the peace train. Come on. Everyone jump up on the beat.
Support comes from the Rainforest Cottage in downtown Juneau. Two furnished and equipped apartments with off-street parking, available for short and long stays. Details and reservations at JunoRainforestCottage.com.
3:20 p.m. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. My next guests are from the City and Borough Juneau Department of Parks and Recreation, and they are Brett Fisher and George Schaff. Welcome both of you to the show.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having us here.
Okay. First off, this is the fourth in the series of City and Borough of Juneau Department profiles. So tell us exactly what Parks and Recreation is responsible for.
All right. Well, let's start off money, because everybody wants to get down to money. We're about a $12 million budget. Of that $12 million, we have four different divisions within that. So I'm going to try to get through these as quick as possible. We have our Recreation Division, which is headed up by Maya Watto, and she's our Recreation Superintendent. And of that area ride recreation, we have youth and adult sports. And the youth sports that we have are things like volleyball and soccer, Start Smart. We have an adult sports program, which is volleyball. We also have Zach Gordon Youth Center, which started a long, long time ago by Zach Gordon. It was a teen club, and it's just really gone into taking care of the needs and recreation needs and sometimes even the food needs we have for the teens in this town, and it's over by Centennial Hall. We also have the Treadwell Ice Arena, which is over in Douglas, and we have our aquatics program, which we have two pools, the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool downtown here and the Diamond Park Aquatic Center out in the valley. Another one of our divisions is building maintenance, so which is a lot of people don't realize that we have actually, we do the facility maintenance for most of our facilities in town here. All the fire departments, police department, some public works and docks and harbors, and also all of our recreation facilities in City Hall. That's about a $2.3 million budget. Speaking of Centennial Hall, we also do visitor services in Centennial Hall. Of that almost $2.2 million, the funding through the General Convention and Visitors Bureau is funded through us, Parks and Rec. So when you look at the $12 million, you say, man, that's a lot of money for recreation. Well, we do a lot more than recreation, parks and recreation. Parking is another one. I'll try to keep it tongue-in-cheek. We put the park back in parking, but it's a serious program, and we're going through some definite serious issues now, but that's one thing that's under Parks and Rec. And then last is our Parks and Landscape, which George is going to talk about that. But before I hand it over to George, I want to talk about an event that's coming up on September 13th, and it's called our Day of Play. This is our fifth annual Day of Play, and actually went through a lot of budget cuts this last year. George lost some folks. We lost a building maintenance mechanic. We certainly did some cutbacks in our aquatics program. We cut back from full-time employees at our Treadwell Ice Arena back from 12 months to 10 months. So we actually had quite a bit of cuts in our programs and our employees. And we decided to not have the Day of Play this year just because of all the cutbacks. And I had a friend of mine suggest that if we could get sponsors for our facilities, would we reconsider? So I brought that back to our senior staff and was wholeheartedly, yep, let's try it. So within 24 hours, we raised about $2,200 to pay for the facilities. So there's no lost revenue. And I just wanted to, if they could go to our website, which is juno.org, and go to Parks Rec, take a look at our Day of Play schedule. And I want to talk about a little bit of what we're doing. We have Augustus Brown Pool, which is 9 to 10:30 a.m., and that's sponsored by Reuben Willis State Farm. And Reuben just absolutely has a passion for youth activities, and he actually sponsors both pools for the day. And then we go to Juneau Douglas City Museum, the Marine Park Pavilion, which is downtown here, and that was sponsored by Grumpy's Deli, which is downtown, Jamie and Andy Troxel, and then Zach Gordon Youth Center is putting on a lunch there, all sorts of fun stuff, climbing wall, Taku Roller Girls is there, and that's Valley Lumber and Building Supply. And Treadwell Arena, we have two skate sessions, and Westmark Baranoff's teamed up with the new Starbucks, which is opening up on September 22nd for the first session, and then Valley Paint Center got the second session. And then we move on to trucks and stuff, which we have a helicopter there landing there from North Star Trucking. And North Star Trucking's been landing a helicopter there for trucks and stuff for the last 3 years, and they took on sponsoring it. We have fire department there, police department, all sorts of fun stuff for kids to climb on. Tingey Orthodontics has taken on Diamond Park Fieldhouse, and then again, Ribbon Willis, State Farm Insurance's Diamond Park Fieldhouse at 4 o'clock to 5:30. So, great event. Give us a call. Check our website, juno.org, and give us a call, 586-5226, if you have any questions.
Again, thanks to all those organizations for sponsoring this, because otherwise it wasn't going to happen.
It wasn't not going to happen, so thanks to the business communities for coming and saving a day of play.
All right, and George, let's get into trails and trail maintenance and some of the other activities.
Sure. So as Brent mentioned, my division is responsible for all of the outdoor things that Parks and Recreation does, and that's everything from Evergreen Cemetery to the landscaping that you see downtown and at all the municipal buildings throughout the borough. We do the landscaping out at the airport, and we also maintain 30 parks, 15 playgrounds, almost 30 ball fields, and over 6,000 acres of public lands and open space. And that extends all the way from South Douglas Island all the way out to Bridget Cove out the road. And it's really it's an enormous area of responsibility, and we do it with 7 year-round employees, and in the summertime we add about 13 more positions to our crew. And, you know, just a couple more numbers. One of the biggest things that we do is we empty trash cans, and we've got about 180 trash cans that we take care of throughout the borough at all of our parks and throughout the downtown area.
These are primarily the bear-proof ones, right?
They are, and they're not cheap, and they have a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yep, and they're all over the place. So, yeah, it's a really big job, and we've got a really dedicated crew that does a really great job at it, and I'm really proud of them. You were asking about trails, and you know, in addition to all the parks and ball fields and the arboretum and the cemetery and all the things that we do outside, trails are a huge part of recreation in Juneau. And we work really closely with other agencies at the Forest Service and state parks to maintain trails that cross city, state, and federal land all over town. And most of the maintenance is actually done through TrailMix, which is a local nonprofit organization that builds and maintains Juneau's trails. And we have a monthly meeting with all the agencies and the TrailMix board where we talk about the projects going on and the maintenance. The city maintains over 100 miles of trail. Nobody really knows exactly, but we're trying to compile a pretty good inventory, but it's pretty safe to say it's 100 miles. And, again, most of that work is done through TrailMix. We also do a lot of work with Saga, and both those organizations bring volunteers to a lot of the projects that we do as well. This summer, we have a lot of really exciting trail projects going on with TrailMix. One of the most recently completed ones is the Outer Point Trail in North Douglas.
That's one I'm very familiar with.
Excellent. So if you've been out
right by there,
if you've been out there in the last month, you've seen some really big changes. And that's Juneau's first fully accessible trail. So from start to finish.
Yes, I have. So there's a big, huge area that's now paved that you can get wheelchair access to.
It is, yep. So we actually, TrailMix worked a lot with Sail and Orca in town. They actually had a volunteer day out there with some of Sail and Orca's consumers. And it's a huge success. Right now, that trail from the parking lot all the way to the beach is accessible. So folks with you know, any level of ability can get out there. And we've got a really nice picnic table and a fire ring out at the beach. And that place is really open for all right now. TrailMix is also working on the other end of town out at Bridget Cove right now. They've started working on the North Bridget Cove Trail, which a lot of folks would better know as the Camping Cove Cabin Trail. And that's an example of a city trail that accesses a state park and a state cabin, but the city trail, it's almost all on city land as you get out there. And so they're doing a lot of improvements. So hopefully people won't get as lost out there as that they have been in the past few years.
All right. Brent, is there anything else that you wanted to highlight that the Parks and Rec Department does cover?
No.
We got most of it then.
Yeah,
huh?
I think we did it in a whirlwind. I think we got a great group of folks that do a great job for this community, and I think it's good summing it up for the department. I know you want to talk about the AFAB and the PRAC,
right? And I know that the budget cuts have hurt. Are there any additional cuts that need to be made, or are you guys pretty much down to your numbers and under budget what you need?
No, there's more cuts, I'm sure, coming.
That's ugly.
They have about a $7 million budget deficit for FY16. So we're looking at certainly how we do things and why we do things and are we doing them the best way, and we're looking even at the aspect of reorganization. Anything that we can provide our services that the community wants at the best way to deliver them and the most efficient way is. So I'm sure more cuts are coming, though.
All right. Again, let's cover the day of play. When's that coming up?
September 13th, and it starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, goes all the way till 5:30. So it's Saturday, September 13th.
All right. Brett Fisher, George Schaff from the City and Borough Juneau Department of Parks and Recreation, thank you very much for being our guests on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 2nd of September, 2014. It's the birthday of the man who wrote the poem about the gingham dog and the calico cat who side by side on the table sat. That was Eugene Field, born St. Louis, 1850. He became a reporter for the St. Louis Evening Journal, worked for papers in Kansas City and Denver as well, went up to Chicago, worked for the Chicago Daily News, which offered him a column. He called it Sharps and Flats. And he also published light verse, especially for children. One of his early poems was Little Boy Blue, about a group of toys waiting for their owner, a toddler who had died. He wrote, Winkin', blinkin', and nod one night, sailed off in a wooden shoe, sailed on a river of crystal light into a sea of dew. Where are you going and what do you wish? The old moon asked the three. We have come to fish for the herring fish that live in this beautiful sea. Nets of silver and gold have we, said Winkin', blinkin', and nod. 1935, on this day, George Gershwin finished his opera Porgy and Bess, based on a true story about a crippled black man named Goat Cart Sammy, who had been arrested in Charleston for attempted murder. 1901, Vice President Teddy Roosevelt came to the Minnesota State Fair, and in a speech before several thousand people, he used the phrase, America must speak softly, but carry a big stick. It's the birthday of the founder of Cirque du Soleil, Guy Laliberté, born in Quebec City, 1959. He was an accordionist and a stilt walker and a fire eater. He formed an acrobatic troupe from a band of street buskers in 1984. The government asked him to take it on tour, and from that grew the empire. There are now 21 different Cirque du Soleil shows, and Forbes magazine estimated Laliberté's net worth at $2.5 billion. And it's the birthday of a hard luck novelist and journalist, Joseph Roth, born in Ukraine, 1894. He was a journalist after the end of the First World War, covering riots and assassinations, political uprisings all over Europe in the 20s and 30s, living in hotels for years on end. Wrote his novel sitting in cafes in between newspaper deadlines. His one big hit novel, 1930, was Job, a retelling of the biblical story, and then set out to write a big ambitious book called The Radetzky March, 1932, a historical novel about the fall of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It came out at a bad time. Hitler had just come to power in Germany. Roth had to flee the country. The Nazis burned his books. He spent his last years in Paris, living in poverty. He was alcoholic, died poor in 1939, unknown. It's only been in the last 10 years that all of his work has been translated into English. Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry, The Summer Ends. The summer ends, and it is time to face another way. Our theme reversed, we harvest the last row to store against the cold, undo the garden that will be undone. We grieve under the weakened sun to see all earth's green fountains dried and fallen all the works of light. You do not speak, and I regret this downfall of the good we sought, as though the fault were mine. I bring the plough to turn the shattering leaves and bent stems into the dark from which they may return. At work, I see you leaving our bright land, the last cut flowers in your hand. The Summer Ends by Wendell Berry from A Timbered Choir, published by Counterpoint Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work. keep in touch.
There's a new meeting place in Juneau. At360 is a unique high-tech studio space for the community. For civic events, arts, cultural and music performances, town hall meetings, training classes, conferences, screenings, and more. If you are organizing an event for 20 to 80 and looking for a venue which is flexible and inviting, call us at 586-1670 or visit our website, ktoo.org/360space. At360, convene, converse, create. Juneau's multimedia space.
3:55 p.m. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host for Juneau Afternoon today, and back with me again is Juneau's School District Superintendent, Dr. Mark Miller. He's here to talk about the school district's response to hazing and moving forward as a community. And also with him is Bridget Weiss, who I'm very happy to have on the show with us as well. Welcome both of you to the studio.
Thank you, Ken. Good afternoon. Thanks.
Okay, this is a serious topic, so let's go into a little bit about the school district's policies regarding hazing first.
Well, the policy simply stated is you can't do it. We have board policies and discipline policies that say it's not something that's tolerated, and if you participate in it actively or passively, there will be consequences. So it's pretty clear that everybody knows, I think, if they read the rules, that it's not okay.
Okay, why is it still going on then?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, one of my sayings that I have is that culture eats structure for breakfast. So if you have a culture of something going on, putting in a rule or having rules against it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. Classic example of that is driving 55 down Egan. Now, with all due respect to the motorists out there, my experience is on a sunny day, most of the people driving down on the left-hand lane are doing more than 55 miles an hour.
Yeah, if you do 55, you're going to get run over.
and that's
I know how that works.
Yeah, that's a classic case of what people have come to expect. The culture of driving is different than the rules or the structure that we've put in.
All right, well, how do we essentially break the chain from what's been going on and introduce a new paradigm for people that, hey, this stuff really is going to be tolerated. I don't care what you did before. I don't care what your parents did before. This just isn't going to happen anymore.
Well, I think, first of all, one of the things that we can't do is we can't use students as examples and call them out in public. That's just not something that we as a school institution can do. It's not right. And there's laws against it. People have asked me, you know, can't you just put their names on the website and say, these are the kids who did it and this is what happened to them as a deterrent? And the answer to that is, no, we can't. And the reason we can't is something called FERPA, or the Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act, which the federal government said, if you're a school and you're getting federal money, you can't release that information. I do want to thank, seriously, just for a minute, KTOO for your coverage of this hazing incident. Because I know you could have, but you chose not to put the name of minors on your website or on the air, both the ones who did it and the ones who were victims. Lisa Fu has, you know, she continues to do investigations, continues to ask the questions, but she's been very cognizant of the fact that if you take a minor's name and you put them on this air or you put them on the internet, from henceforth, when somebody Googles their name and this incident, it's going to pop up even 20 years from now. When they are going for a job, for example, and I don't know about you, Ken, but when I was 17, I did some things that back in the day probably wouldn't have made good press. It never got to that point, but I think we all do. So your station's understanding of that is greatly appreciated, so thank you.
Yeah, most of us do stupid stuff. All right. Even as adults, we do stupid stuff. But then you have to be responsible for that and own up to it.
That's true, too.
How do we make youth, or you know, people that are under the age of 18, own up to the things that they've done? What, I mean, besides, you know, we can't publish their names, but how do we, like, I don't want to say punish them, but I want to, you know, how do we change their way of thinking so that these sort of incidents don't happen again?
Well, I think one of the things that we have to do is we have to make people empathetic. We have to make them see what the other side is feeling. And look at it from their perspective. It's a lot harder to bully someone if you know them, especially if you understand where they're coming from. So I brought Bridget in because she has a lot of experience as a principal up in North Pole, and as well as working with some of our principals on implementing programs to do just what you asked.
Yeah, I did have Bridget on the show once before, too. So,
yeah, I think that as we look at this situation, we really want to look short-term and long-term. So you've asked some really good questions. Responding to this particular incident was very important, but we really need to look further out because it is a culture that needs to be changed. We have some really incredible programs already going on in our schools. At elementary level, there are many of our schools that have positive behavior systems in place, a lot of training around choices and behavior. At one of our middle schools, the DeZonta Kahini Middle School has a program in place called Aggressor Victim Bystander, AVB, where they have been using this for almost a decade and really changing significantly the culture of students in that building. We have lots of other programs that we can put in place to help change this, and we want the adults supporting kids in modeling and making different choices, but we also want to utilize our students who are doing a lot of right things and that can serve as leaders. So really maximizing our students who are doing the right thing could really help, I believe, in the long term.
Okay, I'm going to relate just a couple little things here. We had one young man that I went through elementary and high school with that was bullied mercilessly, like pretty much mm-hmm. till the time of graduation. And, of course, years later, now we have reunions and stuff like that. And, of course, one of them actually knew where he was at this point and said, well, why don't you, are you ever going to come to one of the reunions? And he said, absolutely not. He said, that was a brutal time in my life and it scarred me greatly. And even if these people are nice to me now, he says, I've actually moved on. I've got no use for these people and I don't want to ever see them. So that reflected very badly on people, especially somebody like me that thought, okay, at some point, when you're watching this happen, why don't you jump in and say something or do something? And that always, sort of haunted me a little bit. It's why didn't I do something?
And one of the things that kids have trouble with is thinking about how someone else feels about it. That's a part of our brain that develops a little bit later. As we get to be adults, as we're in our 20s and 30s, we can really see, gee, how does that look from the other side? But kids don't naturally just think, gee, if I do this, how is that going to feel to them, or what does that look like? Which is why a lot of the programs that Bridget was talking about are so vital to the education of our students, because they're not going to get it without our help and guidance. And it's our job as kind of the parent in the parent's place when the kid's at school to help with that concept.
Yeah, that takes quite a bit to develop empathy. And I think at those ages, you're more inclined to be a follower in a lot of cases than a leader.
That's correct, and that's why so many of the strategies and programs that are in place really overtly train kids to know what to look for, to know who they can go to when they see something that's happening, and build up their lack of tolerance for mistreatment of each other. And it is very powerful when kids start leading other kids in this area and make it clear that it's okay to tell somebody when something is not happening the way it should. The impact, as your case is a perfect case example.
Okay,
the impact is lasting.
And I've got one other example. Okay, our football team captain at the time, he's actually not with us anymore. He was killed in 9/11. He was in the South Tower when it went down. His name was Tim Betterly. Well, Tim was captain of the football team. And there was a young lady who had been basically crippled from birth, and she was on crutches all the time, and a few of the other boys on the team were sort of making fun of her. And one day he had enough of it, and he said, you come here and you sit at the table with us. And from then on, a lot of things changed for her, and she remembers that vividly. And she said, that was the day that my life changed, because I was no longer looked at as an outcast. I was welcomed in because of one person's action.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So how do we get that to happen?
I think one way, I believe in being intentional about that and not just expecting kids to get it. So programs really can be created. There's Ignite, Link Crew, peer mentor models. At North Pole High School, as an example, we have an all-freshman day, the first day of school. Our Ignite mentors would run that day basically with adult support, but was kids leading kids. Our football team, as an example, they were not required to be at school that day. Their freshman counterparts were, but the upperclassmen were not. Every single one of them showed up last year on that day in their jersey to join in groups and be a part of that and support all those freshmen students as they got oriented to the school that day. So that's just an example of where kids really, when we train them and put them into leadership roles, they will step up. And that is leadership that I, as the principal, for example, I could do a lot of things, but I couldn't do that same thing that day that kids could do and really shape the culture.
Okay, lastly, it used to be back in the old days that when you left school, anything that was bullying or whatever, quit. Now with social media, those things can continue 24/7. How do we address that and how do we stop those things from happening?
So I think that's key. One of the things, again, that students don't realize because they don't think about it or they don't understand it is once they put it out on social media, it's all over the world and it's out there forever. So an education that, guys, it's not like you're not tweeting to your friend only, right? That's being forwarded. Other people are following that. And before you know it, it will be all over this community and to the media, the print media, the television media at times. And that is really going public. So just to be totally aware that not only is it going within the school, it's going everywhere. So if you're not willing to have your mom or dad see it, it probably shouldn't be on the internet because sooner or later they will. Getting that message out through education is key.
And it does raise the stakes. You bring up a great point. In the old days when we were in school, we could walk away from school and go home and have some separation. That doesn't happen now. So kids who are victims generally face that 24/7. The pressure is heightened. There is no question, as well as the ability for that to travel more extensively, as Dr. Miller said. So I think that just raises the ante. It puts us in a position where we have got to be very intentional and strategic about how we address this and how we begin to long-term really shift some culture pieces.
All right, Bridget and Mark, how do we get the parents in on this to force this culture change? Because they're going to have to be part of it, undoubtedly.
I would agree. And I think that soliciting from parents what they see in here is a really important factor that we could learn from. They certainly have a different perspective. As well, the flip side is we can be a part of educating parents who, many of whom, didn't deal with this when they were kids either, and they don't necessarily understand the impact of the time their kids are on the phone or on the computer and might not have the knowledge to monitor and assess what's going on in their own home on those electronics.
So, I know Bridget and I have kids that are about the same age, and I don't know about you, Bridget. One of the things I struggled with raising mine is how much freedom do you give them, because you don't want to be in every little bit of their business because they need to be able to grow. But you can't give them so much freedom, especially in today's media and internet, social media, where they do something that they'll pay for the rest of their lives. And there are so many examples of sexting and those types of things that kids, the 13-year-old thinks it's funny to take the picture and text it, and the next thing you know, it's on the internet, and now we can't go back to school. So that fine line between monitoring and keeping track of what your kid is doing without being so in their business that they can't grow up is really a tough thing in parenting.
And really partnering with parents, I think you're right, is a critical component to getting us to the next step in the solution. And I think parents are eager and willing to do that.
All right. Well, Mark Miller, Bridget Weiss, this was a good topic. thank you so much for being my guests in the studio once more. It's a pleasure to have both of you back again.
And thanks for sharing your story as well, Ken.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, no problem, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks.
And now before we get going with our next guest, here's a song by John Elliott, who's going to be performing September 4th at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. Doors
Hello
open at 6:30.
Again.
And this is a song called Yesterday Some Roses.
I've been deep in trouble, but I think I'm coming round the bend. Yesterday some roses came around. I took them for what they were. I fell back in love with her. I fell back in love with her. So why, oh why, do I always imagine that I am far from where I am? On the rocks at dawn, building a sandcastle later on. We created a residential section, commercial section, and an industrial section. So why, oh why, do I always imagine that I am far from
Okay, well, that was a little bit of John Elliott's Yesterday Some Roses. And again, he's going to be at the Gold Town Nickelodeon September 4th. Doors are going to open at 6:30. Tickets are at knn.org or at the station, $10 in advance and $12 at the door. My next guests are Cindy McCallan and Jeannie Payton, and they're here to talk about Grandparents Day, which is coming up September 7th. Welcome both of you to the studio.
Thank you.
Okay, let's do a little bit about Grandparents Day. It's a month-long class that you're going to run on Thursdays for grandparenting. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it sort of accidentally came together. I wanted to teach a class about grandmothering because it's such a wonderful experience to be one. And then I noticed on the calendar that it's also the first Monday after Labor Day is National Grandparents Day, and also found out that it's celebrated in 13 other countries, in Poland being the first country to establish that celebration in 1965. And our country, it did not come about until the efforts of Marion McQuaid of West Virginia, and through her efforts and some others, President Jimmy Carter signed this into a statute in 1978. And I'll have to confess that I didn't realize that we also have a national song for Grandparents Day, and it was written by Johnny Prill, and he actually won a National Songwriters Award for this song, and it's called A Song for Grandma and Grandpa. And I'm sorry I can't sing it, but when I find the record, I'm going to get it so my grandchildren will learn it.
Okay.
And there's also an official flower for Grandparents Day, the forget-me-not. How convenient for us here in Alaska.
All right, and Jeannie, do you have anything to add about Grandparents Day?
Just that it's a wonderful day.
All right, and a month-long class. So you got four Thursdays that are coming up.
Yes.
What are you actually going to cover in the class?
Well, I'm a Christian, and so the class will be taught from a Christian perspective, but our intent is not to preach, but that's kind of the basis for the things that we're going to be looking at and studying about. We find in, like, looking in the Old Testament that in the book of Proverbs, it says that we have a responsibility to leave an inheritance for our children's children. And I began wondering, now, what kind of an inheritance do they mean? And I thought about my own grandmother, whose name was Belle, and what did she leave me? And one thing was a wonderful Christian example, and then she also wrote down things that she wanted her grandchildren to remember. I think my grandmother had almost as many grandchildren as Rose Kennedy. Rose had 29, and my grandmother had close to 50. But anyway, she wrote down her wishes for her burial, which I saw that some of the patriarchs in the Old Testament also did, but they also received blessings and charges from their grandfather about wise ways to live their life. And that's what my grandmother did. And I am going to not only honor her, but hopefully help to honor the grandmothers here in Juneau.
All right, Cindy. And when and where are the classes going to be held?
Well, they're going to be on each Thursday night in September, starting on September the 4th. And the meeting will be from 6:30 to 7:45. We're going to try to finish in an hour, but I want us to have that 15 minutes if we needed to talk. And it will be at the Log Annex at the Church of Christ on the Trinity Drive, which is that little road that comes off the Loop Road going toward Glacier Valley School. And that's 8755 Trinity Drive. It is a class for all grandmothers and future grandmothers, and it's presented by grandmothers. Jeannie and I both are grandmothers. And if you need more information, you could call. And, of course, it's absolutely free. One of the things that we hope will happen is that there will be a sharing of experiences from other grandmothers here in town, because we can learn so much from each other.
All right. Well, Cindy McCallum and Jeannie Payden, thank you very much for being our guests on the show today.
Thank you. I wonder, would I have time to say one more thing?
Sure.
There are some famous people who have said things about grandparenting, and I would like to share one with you that, if I can find it real quickly.
Well, perhaps we're going to have to wait for your actual class.
That could be.
Okay. Well, thanks again for being our guest in the studio today.
Well, our pleasure, and thank you. And grandmothers, future grandmothers, come and join us.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northern Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
It's 3:59 almost, and tonight's forecast for Juneau calls for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain late and highs in the upper 50s. Light winds becoming southeasterly at 10 miles an hour late in the afternoon. Overnight, mostly cloudy, still a chance of rain with areas of fog. And tomorrow, cloudy with patchy fog in the morning, scattered showers, highs in the mid-50s, and southeast winds at 10 miles an hour. This is KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast on 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on the following translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay areas, you can tune to K276 AF 103.1 in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens in on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear us on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Digital Channel 871. And KRNN is on 872. KXLL is on 873. It's been my pleasure to host this afternoon. We'll see you again next Tuesday. All Things Considered is coming right up.
If the video is genuine, we are sickened by this brutal act taking the life of an